Ideas are not predictable in terms of when you'll have them and how many you're going to have. And so over the years, we've really created a team and an environment that I think really increases the probability of good ideas. And when they actually arrive, I think nurtures them.
You're listening to WorkWise, the growth mindset for wisdom at work. I'm Ken Kennard, creativity coach and chief creative officer at Accent Interactive. And my co-host is Michael Boyes of Credo Consulting. In this episode, we're joined by Johnny Ive, chief design officer at Apple, by way of a commercial for their recent book, Designed by Apple in California. What can Johnny teach us about the artist role in the creative process? All right, Mike, so welcome back, 2017.
2017. That sounds like something that's far off in the future.
But it's now, and it's now. Fresh.
Yeah. You know, I read Fahrenheit 451 a few weeks back.
How was it?
It sounded like 2017.
Did it really?
Well, it really talks a lot about how our infatuation with media has dumbed us down into kind of slogan kind of people.
Yeah.
And how it's just interesting. It was interesting to read. I thought, wow.
Mm-hmm.
But 2017, here we are.
We're slogan people, like it or not.
But you and I, Ken, are not slogan people. We'd be on the run.
Would we?
We read.
Oh, that's true.
So,
readers. Here we are.
Yeah.
Rebel against the slogan.
Yeah. Our houses would be burned down.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, but we're here to talk about something that would not happen in Fahrenheit 451, aren't we?
What's that?
Well, we're here to talk about creative people.
Oh, I love creative people.
You love creative people. And I think we're here to talk about Johnny Ive, aren't we?
Right. So Johnny Ive was featured recently on a video that talks about the book that Apple came up with. It celebrates the last 20, 25 years of their design work.
They're doing books now?
Yeah.
Well, they have had, you know, notebooks before.
Right.
Sort of, kind of.
Right.
Right.
Right. But this is a book that celebrates their design team's work in pictures. It's mostly pictures, actually.
Wow. And since they make pretty cool looking things, I imagine it's a pretty book.
Yeah, but I don't really care so much about the book so much as I care about the design process, the creative process.
Yeah.
And for me, Johnny is kind of the quintessential artist role. Okay. Like we talk in the creative process, right? At Creativity Labs about these four roles. We've got the explorer, the artist, the judge, and the warrior.
Yeah.
And these are sort of like roles that all the creative process thrives on and needs to include.
Right.
We've already talked about Steve Jobs as being kind of that explorer role.
Yeah.
Personified. And I think Johnny, for me, is kind of that artist role. He's the one that is playing that role of taking all of these good ideas, nurturing them, and producing something from them.
Something really cool.
Yeah. That can be then judged and fought for.
So it's in this clip. Where'd this clip come from?
So this is a video we're going to listen to. And if people want to watch it, they can watch it as well. Look to the show notes for a link to a YouTube video.
Okay.
But it's basically a commercial that advertises the book and tries to get you to buy it.
Okay. So we're gonna go off a commercial that's telling us about what their creative process is or what their artist how they kind of do that. Okay.
So let's listen to the beginning of it here, and then we'll stop it and talk about it.
We're a small design team. We've worked together for 20, 25 years. One of the things that we've learned is the importance of listening, because as we all know, the very best ideas can very often come from the quietest voice.
So let's stop it right there. What do you see in that that tells us something about the creative process? I mean, the first thing I notice is he talks about the importance of listening.
Yeah.
And that ideas can come from the quietest voice.
Yeah.
It seems to me there's a real respect there and a real openness that starts the creative process for the artist. The artist starts by listening, not by talking. And even to the quietest voices, we get the sense that the artist needs to be open enough that even something that isn't dominant, popular, loud, forceful, can be heard, because right. that might be where some right. of the best ideas come yeah. from.
Well, I want to go back to talk about listening, yeah. right? You go, there's two ideas there, really, listening and the quiet voices. And then there's a third big thing there too. But when he says listening, does he literally mean listening? Like, what's he talking about, you think?
Well, I think he's talking about more than one thing, right? There's listening to what does the customer need. Mm-hmm. There's listening to your teammates so that you really can hear the ideas that yeah. are, and really let those ideas come out.
Right.
And then there's also listening to the actual thing. A lot of artists that I coach, particularly writers, talk about how they start out with an idea of creating characters, and then somewhere in the process, they find themselves listening to those characters and learning from them and allowing them to speak as if they were not directing the dialogue as the writer, right, but right. like letting the dialogue emerge from the characters who are there. So I think there's listening to the work as well.
Yeah. So listening to what it's saying back to you.
Yes.
It's taken on its own character. Now, yes. what a person of this character say yes. to me.
Right.
Interesting. So if you're in a team and you're collaborating, you know, he says we've been together for 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
Like, which is a whole nother thing. What do you imagine or see collaborators doing or people doing when they're listening? Are they, because it seems like a simple idea, but it just seems so deep to me. So if you were listening to a person designing something with, what's that look like?
I think it looks like restraint and patience. You know, I work with some creatives that are really quick to start right away
yeah.
sketching. They take the first idea that comes to them. They want to push towards implementation. And so immediately they start, oh, I've got an idea. Listen to
this. Right, right,
right. Even before they've fully heard from the client or from the process or for the team. There's just this impulse that we all have because yeah. we want to be successful.
It stirs something
in
you.
We're good at this. We're good at right. hearing ideas and letting it spark and coming up with a solution. And that's what we're paid for, the solution. We're not paid to listen. So we think that sometimes the faster we can get to that, the more productive we can
right.
be. I don't think it's true necessarily. I think it's what he's teaching us here is that to delay the implementation of an idea, to delay this whole rush to start sketching, could be a way to get to something deeper. So I was dealing with this actually with a client last week, where a client presented a problem. We had solved it before, and they came back and said, that solution's not going to work.
Yeah.
We need to rethink it. When we went to rethink it, we came up with two more solutions
right.
that looked to us to be better
yeah.
than the solution that we had just deprecated.
Right.
And I said to the team, okay, we could go now and implement the best of these two ideas. But before yeah. we do, is there anything else here that we should consider? What if these two ideas were off the table then?
Right.
What? And we started pushing even more into the client to say, what else is really uh-huh. important to you? And out of that came a third idea that was so much better than the first two ideas that it was just clearly obvious that this right. was like golden. And we would never have gotten there had we stopped listening.
Yeah, so it creates space,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. Instead of being a kind of a narrow tunnel, you know, moving forward, it opens a funnel open. It's not a yes. tunnel, it's a funnel.
Yes.
To let things bang around. You know, somebody comes to mind when we think about that, when you use the word restraint, and that's David Yusso.
Oh,
our friend
yeah.
David, that always quiet,
yeah.
always listening. And it's not for lack of ideas.
right?
Yeah. Here's this, you know, this great guy, great scientist who's just sitting there listening. And you know their idea is bouncing around.
Sure.
And he's letting them sink in.
Yeah.
So in a way, it sounds like what you were talking about. It's not just restraint, but it's letting things sink in. But also it sounds like looping back to exploration too.
Right. Yeah. It's letting those ideas kind of germinate and see what happens. He thinks of them as fragile. In fact, let's go to the next segment because he plays off of that here.
Okay.
And tells us more about what he thinks of these ideas.
Ideas are extremely fragile. ideas are not predictable in terms of when you'll have them and how many you're going to have. And so over the years, we've really created a team and an environment that I think really increases the probability of good ideas, and when they actually arrive, I think nurtures them.
Okay, just listen to that language. This is brilliant.
You're not excited about this,
are brilliant.
You? You're okay. Not excited.
Notice what he does not say. Notice what he does not say. He does not say, we've created a place where we can make really great ideas.
Right.
He does not say that. This is not active.
Yeah.
This is passive. He says, what we've created is a team and an environment that I think really increases the probability of good ideas. And he doesn't say, and when we make them arrive, he says, when they actually arrive, I think nurtures them. Listen to the passivity
when this,
of that.
When this train arrives unexpectedly.
Yeah.
So we'd better be ready for it.
Yes. So there's this receptivity. The ideas themselves are not active. They kind of emerge. They show up.
Mm-hmm.
We don't make that happen, but we prepare for it to happen. We've taken these ideas seriously enough that we respect their fragility, and all we're focusing on actively is creating the right environment.
Right.
So that when they do show up, then we can sort of coax them gently along.
Right.
Listen to the language.
Yeah.
It's motherly.
It's very gentle.
It's gentle. It feels feminine to me in terms of, you know, this is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
My job is to provide and nurture and protect.
So it's not an idea. So the idea of an idea factory.
Yeah.
It sounds more like a kind of gentle chemistry.
Yes.
Where things are just simmering.
Yeah.
And sometimes one of those bubbles contains a really neat idea, and we better capture that when it comes.
Right. Now contrast that with what we think about a lot of times when we think about business.
The wildness of, and it moving fast and
leadership, you know, high paced, high tech, right? Go, go, go. Right. That's like the opposite of this kind of energy. This energy is letting things simmer. It's waiting for things to arrive. But it doesn't mean it's completely passive.
Right.
Because the activity is to work harder and harder to make the ideas more likely to emerge. So there's a discipline in there. And there's activity and there's work in there. But it's a work that is for the sake of the environment and for the people, not actively, directly forcing ideas out.
Yeah, and we, you know, in my work, we're always talking about how do we create the environment for good ideas. And what you said is so true. Where the culture of what we have at hand is often contrary to what we're talking about here, where things kind of bubble up and there's a almost a quietness of exploring and thinking and experimenting and letting things come.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like not necessarily a slower pace, but less franticness.
Yes. And it can look to someone else who's a real type A driver.
Yeah.
Like, this is unproductive. These people have their head in the clouds. Why aren't they doing anything? What do they do all day?
Right.
They seem to sit around and look around at the sky.
Right.
But the most effective artists actually get it. They get that it's not like they want to do this. This is just what works, right? They've landed on a discovery that if you want the best ideas, that your job is to work on creating the right environment. And I think businesses need to learn from this.
Yeah.
That a lot of businesses have not quite yet really taken creativity seriously enough to pay for and prioritize the environment.
Well, and so there's a paradox here when we think about that. So one approach, and I would say an older approach to creativity organizations, was to make a special team responsible for it. So you can kind of wall them off.
Yeah.
Protect them.
Those are the creative folks over there.
Let them be that way and wall them off.
Right.
And they're responsible for it.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, so now we're saying to people, no, everyone's got to be creative. We can't afford to have everybody not being creative, right?
Right.
So But if everybody's being creative and they're, and the demands of their marketing or operations or finance are that they move fast, how do you, it sounds like a conflict.
But here's the thing. Bad ideas that are executed quickly are actually slow.
Right.
Because it's counterproductive. You end up scrapping that idea and having to do it again because it didn't work. And what he's talking about is staying with these ideas and letting them emerge. Going back to my previous example, we could have done a whole nother round with idea one or two and come back 2 months later and said, you know what? We have to scrap that. We're going back to the drawing board. That didn't work.
Right.
Or we could have waited five more minutes.
Right.
Literally five more minutes, okay? To say, is there anything else?
Right.
Like, stay curious. Right. Keep asking. Keep listening.
So restrain action.
Yeah. And
just
and
restrain
that
5
minutes
for a bit.
Was golden. Like, that was the 5 minutes that produced the idea that actually on a single implementation is going to work.
Right.
So restrain yourself. I think it's slow as the path to efficiency is in some ways.
Okay. So let me pick up on something else here. Both these clips talked about it. They've been together for 20 or 25 years.
Yeah, I know.
Like, what's that all about?
I don't think you get the best results on your first day at the office.
Right.
There's a team culture going on here, right? They have developed over time such intuition, such knowledge of each other, such teamwork that they can, you know, fire in all cylinders. I think it's no surprise that, you know, that they're doing some of the best and most influential design work right now in our generation.
Right. Right. And again, I'm seeing paradox here or conflict with another idea, which is new ideas, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things we frequently recommend to people is you need a little bit of turnover. You need new people to stir the pot a little bit. And because you get, you know, it's not quite groupthink, but you start thinking alike.
Right.
And
that's true.
How's that fitting? Yeah, so both are true.
Both are true, yeah. And what he's not saying is we've never added a single person to our team in 25 years.
Right.
He's not saying that. And he's not saying that no one has ever left our team in 25 years. That's not true either.
We've been around for a while.
Yeah, but he's talking about in general, this is a team culture that has been going for a while.
Right.
And of course, he's selling the book that captures and celebrates those 25 years.
So
it's logical that he would think that way.
All right.
Here's another. Let's keep listening. There's another clip here that talks about what he thinks the design studio really is. Listen to the language here.
The design studio really is a workshop. We design three-dimensional objects and we make lots and lots of models and prototypes. Designing and making really should be inseparable. For every finished product that you see, tools had to be designed, process had to be created and experimented with. We've worked very hard to create a singular studio that has all of these different facets.
All right, so he sees a design studio as a workshop. And the key thing that stuck out to me here is that he could just be creating a design studio where once you're done with the design, you're done, right?
You pass it off.
Almost like an architect does a drawing and turns it over to the builder.
Right.
And then he's like, done. He doesn't need to see the building. He feels like, well, it's done already.
I did my job,
yeah. And what he's saying is, no, you need to bring both of those under the same creative process.
Right.
One of the things I've been trying to do with my clients is get them to take the next step in design by making some kind of prototype, a quick sketch in some cases, or a model. Let's not completely implement this thing, but let's take it to a step between concept and completion. What's the step in between? Maybe there's two or three steps, depends on what you're making.
Yeah.
But can we do a kind of model, a kind of prototype? What's the value of that?
Yeah.
Well, now it's in your hands. Now it's tangible in some way. And now you can play with it and go, yeah, I think this really confirms.
Or here's something that's not going to work.
I didn't realize it, but now that I see it, this is too big.
Yeah.
Or this has got too much of something in it. How can we shave this off? Instead of going all the way to implementation, paying for that, and then realizing it, and having to step back and redo, you can waste a lot of time and money, again, jumping right to implementation without taking these baby steps.
Well, you also don't have hard feelings either. right? So when a designer or the idea maker, you know, passes it off to somebody to implement, and then his ideas turn out not to be all used, they get upset. I mean, you see this over and over.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whether it's a writing something or building a process, or it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
And one of the mantras you always hear from service departments and companies like legal or marketing or IT is, you should have involved us earlier in the process.
Right.
We could have told you this stuff so we don't have to read, which makes sense for a design team to do that, right?
Yeah.
At the same time, what you don't hear is, you should have included me in your process. So legal says, well, you should have involved us earlier. We would have given this advice, so you wouldn't have to go down that process. But what you don't hear is the operational department saying to legal, well, you should have kept me involved in the legal.
Yeah.
So we could talk about what my intent really was, and you could modify things so that it keeps my intent or whatever.
Yeah.
So it speaks to the issue of the creator staying involved in the creation.
And it also speaks to the fact that all the team members are actually creators.
Right. It does. Exactly. That's right.
Right.
We're all creators.
Right. So one of the people I've been coaching recently has been really creative now. That she's been doing creativity coaching. But what she's bumping up against is that when she starts to implement those ideas, it requires a team. Not everyone on the team is on board with the creative process or even sees themselves as part of it, even though they're a key player.
Right.
And so there's only so far a creative can go if the whole team isn't sort of on board with the fact that creativity is not a solo art. You know, that's why I like the word creative instead of artist here.
Yeah.
Like an artist, we think of as someone who goes away into their own studio by themselves. They go paint and they come back and it's done, right? This is not how most business gets done, right? We're in teams. Creativity is so important to getting team results that we all need to be on board with the process, and we all need to be working together to do it.
Yeah. So it's a mental shift. So I'm thinking about this in terms of my work with leaders, is that there's a mental shift that goes on from, here's my product, it's finished.
Right.
And I'm expecting a finished product, to, no, we're co-creators.
Yes.
And so I'm not taking, you know, my edits or my changes to this as a failure on your part.
Right.
I'm taking this as, we're co-creating.
Right.
And it's my phase to enter the creative process.
And there's
process.
So much that goes into that relationship that to make that work. It's not just, hey, here's how we should view my edits. It's also, here's how I need to view you.
Right.
And here's how you can view me.
Mm-hmm.
So I call that coactive creativity. We're creating stuff actively together in a process that honors the way the process works, right? As we've discovered it.
Right.
And that, once you get that going, the creative force is unstoppable, because the team's really able to, all those individuals can use their strengths, benefit the process, honor each other, keep listening, keep open, and great results come of it, as you see here.
Interesting.
So let's go into one more step here.
Lots of food for thought there.
Yeah. Let's do one more step here with Johnny. He wants to talk about what it's like to stay inquisitive. Listen to this.
The hallmark of the group has been to be inquisitive and ask an awful lot of questions. We have really made it a practice to just have our heads down and work, and ignore, in some senses, all the reasons why something shouldn't be possible.
Okay, hold on a second. Ignore the reasons why something shouldn't be possible? Like, just think about that for a minute, okay? What is the design process according to Johnny Ive? Well, there's only two processes that if creativity is a combination of novelty and utility, okay? Novelty meaning something's new, different, unique, and utility, it works.
Right.
Okay? Something that works. There's two common approaches to creativity. You could either start with something that's novel. Here's a novel idea. And what would we have to do to that novel idea to make it actually work?
Right.
Okay? Because novel idea by itself that doesn't work is not creative. We call that interesting. Oh, that's an interesting idea. But it's not creative. Or you could start with something that works. Like, here's an idea that we know would work. And then you ask the question, what do we need to do to make that novel? How can we make that unique? Because if it just works, but it's not novel, we don't call that creative. We just call that, you know, cranking another one out. It's right. the same process same we've thing. Always used, right? We use words like assembly line for that.
Right.
That's not creativity. So it turns out that adults commonly use the second process. They start with something that works.
That's right.
And then they say to themselves, now that's not really creative. So let's tweak it a little bit and see if we can make that idea more creative.
Yeah.
Okay. Children, on the other hand, they don't do that. They start with something that's novel. And then when they have something they really like, they ask the question, how can we make this work? So what do we see here in Johnny Ives' example? He says, we put our heads down and ignore, in some senses, all the reasons why something shouldn't be possible. What process is he using? He's starting with novelty.
He's starting with novelty,
clearly.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is proven to produce breakthrough results.
Right. Well, what's interesting is this loops back to something he said in the prior clip, which is sometimes we don't even have the tools to create this thing. So we have to create the tools to do the creating of the thing. So that's that piece where he's acting on the world to make this possible.
Right.
What do I have to do? I have to make a tool, a new tool.
Yeah.
And I'm struck that, you know, I've seen this happen in medicine. You know, I knew a doctor a while ago who was a surgeon, and he was inventing new surgical tools because he just didn't have what he needed to do what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so he made the tools.
Yeah.
And you see that a lot in science, people making the tools to do the stuff so they can answer the questions that they have, right? So that's just it's a funny thing because that's what we see. You know, when I'm leading problem solving groups, people say it's not possible, it's not our world.
Yeah.
And they cease to believe that they can change their world to make it possible.
Right. And what's good about that negative reaction is that they're right. It does have to work in the end, right?
Right.
I think we need to honor that. We can't just be a bunch of people that come up with crazy ideas that never work.
Right, yeah.
But I think what you see here is a willingness. This is where the creative work comes in, a willingness to suspend that negative judgment that says, well, obviously that won't work, to still play with the idea.
Right.
You know, what is there about this unique idea that speaks to us that where can it work? What would have to be true for this to actually work?
Right.
And start thinking along those lines. Open, inquisitive, curious, right? So this is where, you know, back to that same woman who I was coaching, you know, she's creative and the team's not.
Right.
And so what did she do when she ran up against this coworker?
Well, what did she do? I want to hear.
Yeah. So what she did, she said to that, here's a great idea. He said, well, that's not going to work. And here's why. She came back and said, well, what would have to be true for it to work?
Right.
Like what could work?
Yeah.
Right. Let's explore the boundaries of what works. Right. Instead of shutting the idea down, say, well, what would have to be true for something like this to work?
Right.
What modifications would have to be? Well, all of a sudden now you're into explore mode.
Right.
Right. So that's why the artist and the explorer are close buddies, right? Because they keep playing back and forth against this. And that sends them to new directions.
Right.
Where you can preserve what's good about the novelty, even while you're honoring the fact that you're right. It does have to work in the end.
Right. So she didn't stop the creative process.
Right.
She just moved it back to a different phase.
That's exactly it. And that's what keeps the energy going.
Right.
I mean, she could have had a really bad day there, right?
Right.
Come back and said,
how many times have we failed?
And how do I feel about my collaborator now? And I said, well, he's not a collaborator. if all he does is tell you why things don't work, he's actually not participating in the creative process.
Right. Yeah.
So your challenge is to actually involve him as a creator or get rid of him and go on to someone else who can be creative with you. But this doesn't count as a collaborator if all they do is shut your ideas down.
Which means restraining your feelings like you're a stick in the mud and you don't want to play and you're no good.
So this is a source of conflict in the workplace. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying. Is that we have different views about how this idea is going to get implemented, who you are to me. And if I experience you as nothing more than a person who shuts down my novel ideas because they don't actually work, then I'm not going to see you as a creative collaborator. I'm going to see you as a naysayer, a critic. You know, you're going to be like a saboteur to me. You're just going to be shutting everything down.
Right.
And so I think that you and I need to agree, if we're collaborating with each other, how are we going to be with each other?
Right.
And we need some language for that. And we need some processes for that.
And this goes back to one of the things I've been thinking a lot about is that we don't have the tools for conversation. Right? When conflict breaks out and things break down because we don't have the tools for conversation. She had a great tool. Well, what would have to be true in order for this to work?
Yeah.
And that she had to have that tool at the ready or some perspective at the ready to keep the momentum moving.
Right.
But if you don't have that, where are you? You're dead in the water.
Yeah.
You're dead in conflict. You shut my idea down.
Yeah.
You're just a stick in the mud.
Yep.
Yep. I've been a stick in the mud.
Yeah, I have too. Truthfully, I have too. Because it triggers something that I feel deeply, like that, you know what? This has to work.
Yeah.
And I think where it gets, where I become even more a stick in the mud is when there's pressure on.
Yeah.
Like low amount of time, not a lot of time, not a lot of money. I'm feeling constrained. Maybe I'm fearful, or I'm feeling like there's a lot on the line. This has to work.
Or you have other things to do. I don't have time to waste on your stupid ideas that are just crazy. Don't understand what's going on here.
Right, right. So that there's a price to be paid for this creative work, and you should not enter into it if you're not willing to. You know, pay that price, really. Well, it's expensive.
When we talk about problem solving, one of the things we often talk about is understanding what phase of the problem solving, you know, process you're in. Because if you're trying to contribute to, you know, analysis, you're analyzing something when you're just exploring or when you're just trying to define what the issue is, you're not being very helpful and it shuts things down. We have to all agree this is the phase, this is the container we're in. And, you know, maybe we got to look at them like we have these containers that are semi-permeable, right? Where in this phase we're exploring. If we can go back for the creative or problem solving, but we're exploring here, but now we're being the artist.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's this permeable membrane between the two where we pass back and forth.
Yes, we do.
But we try to make them little containers for certain kinds of environments.
That's a great visual. Semi-permeable container, I think, captures it. It's both a boundary and it's also a crossable boundary.
Right.
There's some flexibility there.
Yeah.
Let's see what kind of this plane here with Johnny. Okay. He's going to talk a little bit about the book. Finally, it's been an advertisement about a book, and we haven't even heard anything about the book until the last.
Who knew?
Last bit here.
Yeah.
So here's how it ends.
This book captures a point in time of incredible transitions and quite shocking change. You understand the nature of an object so much more when you understand how it came to be. The book tells dozens and dozens of stories. You see momentum, you see learning. Of course, as designers, you live in the future. It's not that we're not interested in the work we've done before. It's just we are so consumed by what we haven't done yet.
So it's an advertisement. Does that mean we've wasted all this conversation? I mean, is this just an ad?
Well, ads can contain great lessons, I think, as we've seen here.
Well, so I think, So my answer to my own question is, well, this is an ad telling their story.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just it's authenticity. And they're sharing what they've learned through reflection.
Right. And really the book is just one way to capture that story.
Yeah.
Right. And the speaking about the book is another way. And it's interesting how visual this book is. There's not a lot of language in the book. It's mostly picture after picture after picture.
Yeah.
And he says it tells the story when you understand how things are made. But we don't understand how things are made. We needed this video even to get a peek into that, I think, to really understand the process that they were going through. And that's where the appreciation, I think, comes from. But I love how he says, you see momentum, you see learning. You know, how often do we celebrate, look back, you know, and celebrate the learning that we've done, the process that we've gone through, the celebration of the achievements that we've made? You know, I'm working with another client who's getting ready to celebrate a big anniversary for their organization. And, you know, it's a fun time. It's a little bit, I can see the tension in the organization, like, we're going to spend time and money on this, really? You know, is this really pushing our mission forward? You know, that's money we could have spent on, and then fill in the blank to all the things that we care so much about. Yeah. And yet, there's this recognition that it's good and right to stop and celebrate the victories of the past and the process that we've been on. And what can we learn from that reflection that can actually provide the keys to our success
right.
for the next 10, 20, 30 years?
Yeah, I think you just used one of the words that was bouncing around in my head, which is reflection. So forcing this reflection to create this book puts you into reflection mode, and that's learning mode,
yeah,
right?
It is.
You're going back and you're learning who you were, you're seeing what you learned, because mostly we're conscious of where our heads are, you know, are now.
Yeah.
And we're not conscious of where it's been. And so the idea of informing and to see how we think now versus how we thought tells us what we've learned. And it also tells us what our operating system is now.
Yeah.
It brings it to mind so that we can be aware of, well, this is what the operating system is now, but what else is possible?
Hmm.
Right. So I think, you know, just it seems extravagant.
Yes, it is.
And it seems self-focused, but it's also an exercise in learning. And it's also an exercise, it sounds like, for your client in stating what we value.
Yeah. It's revisiting our core values
right.
in light of the process and progress that's been made. And then asking the question, so what? Like, are our core values still core
right.
to us? Do we
right.
Have we seen them shift in a good way, in a bad way?
Right.
If this plays itself out on its current trajectory, then what results are we likely to see? Or
yeah.
is it true that what got us here is not going to get us there? And we're
right.
going to, something fundamental is going to now have to shift because we've gone through the growing pains, and now we need to slough off some of the key things that served us quite well 10
right.
years ago.
Yeah.
Or 5 years ago, but now they just don't fit where we are now.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about all the re's, mm-hmm. all the re's we've talked about in our conversation. So the first one was to restrain
yeah.
ourselves, right?
Yeah.
So that was one of the ones. Reflection.
Yeah.
To rethink about and reinforce values. And then you said slough off to kind of remake
mm-hmm.
ourselves, right?
Yeah.
This is the is the rerun episode. I don't know what it is, but there's a lot of re's going on here. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's all invited by this opportunity to say, here's an anniversary. We're going to mark it. We're
yeah.
not going to just skate over this opportunity. We're going to suck the marrow out of the anniversary opportunity.
Yeah.
And for them, it was about their design process, their
yeah.
creative process. And I think you see in this leader, someone who's setting down the values that are conducive to the artist role and the creative
right.
process.
Right.
He's saying, we're going to ask lots of questions. We're going to honor wherever ideas come from, even if it's from the smallest
yeah.
voice. We're going to create an environment where those ideas can be nurtured, and we're going to expect them to show up and,
right.
and nurture them when they do. And then we're going to be open to figuring out, okay, maybe this idea doesn't work.
Yeah.
Well, then how do we make it work? Like what would, maybe we need a new
maybe
tool.
Maybe we could recycle it. Take that thing and use it for something else, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So see, the other thing I think is the containers, right? How do we create those containers, that environment that we want, and asking ourselves and our clients to think about let's look at our containers and what is bubbling up out of our containers. And what might we need to change in that potion inside to get what we're looking for?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, that was very interesting, Ken. Thank you for bringing this to me and to our conversation. You know, when I called you a while ago, I said, well, what's in this?
Right, right.
And then, wow, you had a lot. So I want to thank you for all that great stuff. And I've learned a lot in our discussion. So awesome.
Thanks for revisiting this topic with me.
It's been really nice, Ken. Have a really good day.
If you're interested in watching the video we just listened to, check the link in the show notes. And for more on my creativity coaching, you can see kenkennard.com. Or for Mike's work, head on over to credoconsulting.us. And of course, you can learn more about our creativity workshops at creativitylabs.us. Thanks for joining us, everyone. I'm Ken Kennard.